You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey, I'm Kay Hanley from Letters to Cleo, and you are listening to The Flopcast.
Live from Chicken Town, this is The Flopcast, episode 342.
We're here to jingle everybody's bells.
Yes, yes, hello, Cornflake.
Season's greetings, Kevin.
It is technically the holidays now, isn't it?
I'm so into it. Can you tell?
The show is post-Thanksgiving, when it comes out. Or don't tell anybody, but we're recording this a couple of days before Thanksgiving.
Yes.
But play along. It's the holidays. It's after Thanksgiving.
But I'm already dressed head to toe in mistletoe.
Yes. Hey, what'd you think of that parade? Now let's just pretend the parade already happened, the Macy's parade.
It went on forever.
It was spectacular. I was shocked by that brawl when the whole crowd just destroyed all the balloons. The Rockettes were screaming in terror, running in every direction.
Yeah. I don't recall it ever hitting that pitch in previous years.
It was a disaster the likes of which we'd never seen in Thanksgiving parade history, except for that one year that I was in the Thanksgiving parade juggling spam.
Oh, yes.
That was the greatest disaster in Thanksgiving parade history. But that's another story for another time.
That's true.
It's a story we already told here on the show.
Yes.
Some years ago.
And that actually happened.
Yeah, that's real. I didn't make that up. The weirdest Thanksgiving I ever had was they brought me to New York to juggle spam in a Thanksgiving Day parade. And we got to throw an asterisk on that. Not the Macy's parade.
Right.
That's how weird it was. It was me. It was Tom Bergeron from Dancing with the Stars. It was Phil Kogan from The Amazing Race, and Jennifer Grey was there from Dirty Dancing. It was an all-star cast.
So was this...
It was just the four of us.
Occurring down a street parallel to the Macy's parade? Was it a parallel parade?
I'm not sure of the exact proximity to the real parade, but this was the FX network put on their own pathetic little parade somewhere in Manhattan.
They wouldn't even tell you where?
They put a bag over my head and drove me there. I was not allowed to know exactly where we were.
Some of the worst trips for me to Manhattan have started that way as well.
It's usually a red flag when they invite you to be in a parade and then a bag suddenly drops over your head. Yeah, but that's how it went down for me and Jennifer Grey. We have not worked together since. Go back through the archives of the Flopcast. So some years back, some Thanksgiving past, I told that whole weird story, I believe, here on the show. So let's not dwell on it. Let's move on.
Okay.
But happy Thanksgiving, everybody. So we have a couple things to get through, hopefully quickly today, because I'm already sleepy and exhausted. I have reason to be exhausted, as you know.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe we'll touch on that in a minute.
I have no excuse. Sleepy.
You are sleepy anyway?
By nature, okay. Yes.
You're drinking iced coffee. Maybe that'll help.
Yes.
Your fish heads bet winning iced coffee, that'll get you going.
It just makes it that much more delicious when you put it that way.
I've just started sipping my hot coffee over here, like normal people do in November.
Yeah, normal schmormal.
not to suggest that I'm in any way normal, but when it comes to coffee, perhaps I am compared to you. Anyway, maybe the coffee will wake us up as we go along, but let's get going, Cornflake. Let's get started. What is National Whatever Day?
National Whatever Day!
It never ceases to amaze me what has its own day. And November 30th, mason jars have their own day. National Mason Jar Day.
Wow.
Yes.
Now, as someone who does not know much about jars, I'm going to come out and admit right now, I don't know exactly what constitutes a mason jar versus all other jars in the universe.
Okay. Well, think of your standard jar.
Yeah. Like a Smucker's jelly jar.
Okay, good. Because every jar of stuff that I was thinking of is things I don't like pickles and mayonnaise, just bleh. Jelly jar.
All right.
The lid is one piece.
Yeah.
Mason jar has a lid that is several pieces, such that you can do the sealing of it at home.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
So that's what makes them special, but people use mason jars for all kinds of things. So,
yeah, so there's like weird people at home preserving their own strange things that they've been growing in the basement.
Yes.
And it goes in a mason jar.
And these cans were invented back in the mid-1850s.
By Edith Mason, a mad genius of a woman.
Edith Mason.
That's just a guess. That's a good guess.
It was John Landis Mason.
Okay. See, her husband got all the credit.
So well, it goes.
We're here to take a stand and recognize Edith Mason, who I did not just make up.
You didn't.
Inventor of the mason jar. Maybe I did.
Okay.
But I'm celebrating Edith Mason nevertheless, even though she doesn't exist until just now.
When I saw that this was an occasion, I was thinking of things that I've done with mason jars.
So you've used the mason jar?
Yes.
Because I don't think I ever have.
You remember when I was learning how to make bouquets and I was learning how to do floral design?
You got into the nasty world of floral arranging a couple of years ago, yes.
The first official arrangement I ever made used a mason jar.
Huh. You just shoved a bunch of flowers into it and sealed them up?
I forgot to seal them, so they didn't stay fresh.
Yeah.
Sadly.
You just used it just as a base?
Yeah, I just used the base.
And flowers were just sticking out of it?
Yes.
So it was just a convenient vessel. It did not matter that it was a mason jar. Edith Mason would have been disgusted.
She would have been furious.
To see her invention just going to waste like that, where any vase would have done.
Man, if you don't approve of the fact that I've used them for floral arrangements, you definitely would not approve of the other things that I have done with mason jars.
See how fired up I get about Mason Jar Day every year? It ruins the holidays.
Because look, let's just get right down to it.
Yep.
The perfect thing for mason jars is to drink moonshine out of them.
Oh, yeah.
Would you judge a person drinking out of a mason jar?
Is that how people make their moonshine? They seal it up in a jar?
I think so.
And they let it sit there and boozify?
Yes.
Okay, let's say yes. Like we're in Hazard County.
After you drink it, I don't remember how it was done.
I don't know how any of this works.
So all I want to say is next time you see me drinking out of a jar, don't judge. I might be celebrating November 30th, which is National Mason Jar Day.
All right, you found a bizarre day for us once again. But look, we have a new fictional hero, Edith Mason. So it all worked out.
Cheers, Edith Mason.
All right, moving on. Before we're sued by the Mason family, her descendants, her angry descendants, trying to defend the Mason name. Oh, you and I were just out a couple of days ago.
We were.
Remember?
We weren't drinking moonshine out of jars.
No.
But we were having ourselves a grand old time.
All the weird beverages did get involved at one point, didn't they?
Yeah.
Not mason jar weird, but like arguably even weirder, I suppose.
One might say.
But we've talked about Letters to Cleo many times on the Flopcast, because that's like one of my very favorite bands of all time, is Letters to Cleo, featuring my favorite singer, Kay Hanley.
Solid choice for favorite singer.
Thank you. And I've always said, any song you can think of, it would always sound better if Kay Hanley was singing it.
Don't worry, be happy.
Yeah, well, no one should ever sing that. But if anyone had to, better Kay than Edith McFerrin, whose husband got all the credit for that song. Or the blame, I guess we should say. But yeah, if I had to listen to that song, and hopefully I never will ever again, I'd go with Kay Hanley.
Kay is better than any Edith out there.
And yeah, because we love Letters to Cleo. And this was a Boston band from the 90s, and people might remember Here and Now was their hit song.
Right. They might remember it from the 90s.
Yeah. Not a top 40 song, but like a modern rock, alternative rock radio hit song. And then it was on MTV quite a bit back then.
And some people don't remember it from the 90s, but they remember it from Parks and Rec.
Letters to Cleo popped up on Parks and Recreation as well. They established the, what's his name, the character played by Adam Scott. I don't remember the character's name.
It's not coming to me either.
They established that he was a raging, out-of-control Letters to Cleo fan. And then Pawnee, the town of Pawnee, Indiana, had a big concert, and they brought in Letters to Cleo to perform in Pawnee. So they had the real Letters to Cleo on the show performing Here and Now while Adam Scott was standing off to the side of the stage screaming, I love you, Kay Hanley.
That's beautiful.
And yeah, they're great. And Kay went on to do a lot of cool, very cool solo stuff through the 2000s. I think that the kids today probably don't really know Letters to Cleo. I don't know what they're listening to.
I don't think they even know what letters are.
They don't know what I'm listening to. Yeah, kids today would have like Twitters to Cleo.
Right. Tweets to Cleo.
Yeah, we're Snapchatting Cleo. I think the name of the band came from, that was Kay Hanley had a pen pal when she was a kid named Cleo. So they named the band Letters to Cleo after Kay's old pen pal.
Text to Cleo. It's just
a friend of mine who's way younger than me. Was just asking what concert I was going to this past week, and I said Letters to Cleo, and she was like, I don't know who that is, and I did not expect her to. The only reference I thought she might know was I mentioned that Kay was the singing voice of Josie in the Josie and the Pussycats movie.
Ah.
From like 2001, I guess, whenever that thing came up.
When I was explaining to folks that I was going to go out and see Letters to Cleo on Friday night, I didn't even think people that were my contemporaries might remember.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, before anybody even got a chance to ask, said it was a band from the 90s that I liked.
I first saw Letters to Cleo back in the 90s. I only saw them once in their original run, and that was in 1995, I believe. It was after their second album came out, and that was down at Lupo's in Providence. What I remember at that show is that girls were throwing their bras onto the stage. Because somebody threw a bra up to Kay, and Kay hung it from her mic stand, and then a couple more went up. So that the two guitarists also got one.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. They're very giving. The ladies of Rhode Island,
that's
what I learned.
True. They know what that band needs. Well, I first saw Letters to Cleo live in concert on November 16th, 2018.
That was much more recently than my first Cleo show. And I've seen them several times in the last few years because they finally started coming around doing reunion shows. Last year in November, they did three nights in a row in Boston to celebrate the vinyl release of their three albums. One of us was crazy enough to show up all three nights last year.
I remember you saying it started to feel like a job.
That was my job for a week, yeah, just every night I go see Cleo. And this year they announced two shows in Boston, but now they're calling it their annual homecoming shows. So I guess the plan now is
to hold them to it.
I'm going to keep doing this every November. I assume it'll be the weekend before Thanksgiving. Cleo's going to come home to us. I think most, if not all of them, are Los Angeles-based these days, but it probably makes sense for them to come back this time of year because I'm sure they all have family out here because they were from these parts.
Originally,
they were a Boston band. Kay Hanley, you know this. Kay Hanley grew up like across the street from the Wahlbergs.
Of the New Kids on the Block.
New Kids, yeah. They were all neighbors back then. So Cleo came back. Once again, I was crazy enough to want to go to both shows. They're doing two nights. But you were crazy enough to come along with me night one.
It was a fantastic Friday night out.
You'd never seen them before, so I was happy to finally bring you to see Letters to Cleo for the first time. So in we go to Boston, the big city. We rode the rails, rode the subway.
Yeah.
Got there, grabbed some pizza pie. And then you found a coffee shop right next door.
Blue State Coffee.
So we're going to duck in there, get some beverages.
Yes.
I got a nice hot coffee, just like the one I'm sipping right now. Here's where things started to go off the rails.
Did we mention it was freezing cold that particular night?
It was a very, very cold night, yes. So
it was
frosty. Of course I want the hot coffee, because we're getting ready to go line up in front of the club, because we wanted to get in and get a good spot right up front.
But not only could I not resist a cold beverage, but I had forgotten that it is perilous to mix seltzer water with coffee.
We actually discussed this on the Flopcast a few weeks ago. You announced that in desperation one day, just at home, you made coffee with seltzer water, and it was a huge disaster.
Look, there's coffee with seltzer water
now
on the menu.
We flash forward now to this coffee shop that we were at, and they have a seltzer espresso beverage on the menu. You zeroed right in on it, started asking questions about it, gave it some thought, remembered how it all went horribly wrong the first time, and then you said, yes, that's what I want. Give me one of those.
Yes.
And you got their weird seltzer espresso beverage, iced.
If they're serving it at a restaurant, maybe they know something I don't. And you know what?
This must be great. It's on the menu.
Yeah, if they've made a menu item out of it. But I was wrong.
I kept asking you, so you're getting the hang of it now? Is it getting better as you go along? You're getting used to it? Are you coming around on this? And you were like, nope, this is pretty bad.
And know this, dear listeners, it's not as if we sat inside and had these drinks.
Nah, we took it to the streets like the Doobie Brothers.
We were standing in line outside the Paradise in the freezing cold, and the one thing that would have warmed me up would have been a hot coffee. And I'm standing there, not with just a cold beverage, but seltzer coffee, of all things.
So that was ridiculous.
That was a big mistake.
We're out there with our beverages right up by the front of the line because a few people are crazy enough to get there as early as we did, but there were a few. Go inside, go right up to the front of the stupid stage and stake out our spot to wait for Cleo. But there was an opening act, and I was looking forward to this opening act because I'd never seen them before, but I'd heard the band. I knew they were very good. And you kind of remember this band too, right?
Yes.
This was American Hi-Fi. Who they had a single that got some modern rock airplay, I think, in like the early 2000s, I'm going to say. A very catchy power pop song called Flavor of the Week.
And the audience remembered it well.
I remembered it too. I was a fan of that back when it came out.
Fronted by Stacey Jones.
Yeah, this is a Kenny Loggins style maneuver by Stacey Jones. As we've mentioned many, many times, I once saw Kenny Loggins open for himself.
Right.
He's his own opening act. And that's what Stacey Jones did, because Stacey Jones is the front man of American Hi-Fi. He's playing guitar and singing lead. But he's also the drummer in Letters to Cleo. So he opened for himself at both of these Cleo shows.
Impressive.
He was so good. Terrific front man. And he doesn't even get a vocal mic with Letters to Cleo. When he goes back behind those drums, you'd never know.
Yeah, you wouldn't have any idea.
There's a legitimate front man hiding back there behind the drums, like Dave Grohl used to. So they were fun. I recommend looking up American Hi-Fi. Very cool band. And a little intermission after that. And, oh, my friend Liz found us, remember?
Yes.
Old friend of mine from back when I was hosting the open mic night at The Grind, back in the 90s. And we used to hang out all the time back then. We used to go to Bare Naked Ladies concerts together, at least once or twice. Liz and I went to a BNL show together.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, and I had to kind of claw my way back through the crowd and say a quick hello to her. We had like a 10-second reunion after, I think, 19 years. I hope to see her again before another 19 years goes by, you know?
No guarantees, though.
Who knows? Maybe we'll see her at a Cleo show 19 years from now. And then here comes Cleo. This is your first time seeing Letters to Cleo.
Yes, and I had some hint of what songs they were going to perform because the set list was taped to the stage right in front of us.
Set list was right in front of you. You could peek.
Yes.
Now, because we were so squished up against the front of the stage, and we were also right in front of their lead guitarist, USA Mike, Michael Eisenstein, and yikes, he came dangerously close to us through the whole show.
I loved, he had this black t-shirt on with white capital letters that said human being on them.
Yes.
I liked his shirt a lot.
USA Mike was wearing a human being t-shirt.
He was wearing a human being t-shirt and was playing guitar directly to our faces.
I mean, every song, every time he was going to play a guitar solo, he was shoving his guitar right in our heads every time, all night.
Hi, I am USA Mike, and I will play guitar directly to your face. And it wasn't an accident, because he was grinning.
Oh,
like he knew.
He knew he was messing with us.
He knew what he was doing.
A little bit, but we're watching these, and I'm like, yeah, this is a great guitar solo, but I don't think anyone can actually see what he's doing except you and me.
Right.
It's happening that close to our heads.
It's happening to our faces.
Oh, we got Kay's attention, too, though, at one point. Kay Hanley. Who you've heard here on the Flopcast,
yes.
We should say. I've met Kay a handful of times over the years, very briefly. And last time I met with her, she was actually nice enough to record that little Flopcast ID for us, which we love. But Kay was actually pointing out the t-shirts in the audience, because it's all a bunch of old school Boston music fans that come to these shows. Then she commented on my shirt, because I was wearing a T.T. the Bears shirt, the late great Boston rock club T.T. the Bears, where Cleo played quite a bit back in the day. Anyway, a fantastic show from Cleo, of course. And yeah, towards the end of the show, a woman hopped up on stage to play a keyboard, which was unusual. I don't think I'd ever seen them do a show where they had a guest keyboardist. That was nice. But they needed a guest keyboardist because, as you realized, I think you were tipped off by
peeking
at the set list. But yikes, they broke into a Cars cover.
Which is a bold move when you're in Boston.
But that's a cover that they've done before. People know the Cleo version of Dangerous Type, because that was from a movie.
Right.
That's on the soundtrack to The Craft.
Yes.
It's a movie about teenage witches, I think.
Yes.
I haven't seen it.
It hardly deserves to be called a movie.
Not a fan? I didn't even see it.
Does it show?
Did you see it?
Does it show that I'm not a fan?
Did you suffer through it? The Craft?
I suffered through a portion of it. I could not suffer through the entire thing.
We prefer The Worst Witch with Charlotte Ray. The other surprise at the end of the show was suddenly a horn section comes out.
Yeah, that was a big surprise.
For the first time ever, I believe. Kay said this was like her lifelong dream.
She always was happening. A live horn
section. Letters to Cleo never got to play with a horn section, but they had a four-piece horn section on stage for the final couple of songs of the show. That was a great show. And yeah, that was you finally got to see Kay Hanley and Letters to Cleo.
I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Me too. In fact, I went back the next night.
Wow. I would say I can't believe it, but I know you, Kevin,
yeah.
So I totally can believe it.
The mayor and I came for night two, saw a bunch of the exact same people that were there at night one. There's a lot of people crazy enough like me to go both nights. One of the guys that was up in the front of the line with us, he was there. I talked to him a little bit the second night. He came up from Charlotte for these Clio shows.
Wow.
Yeah. That's dedication.
I'll say.
So, yeah, we went out in the freezing cold, and we got right up front again. Felicity and I were in the exact same spot. Exact same spot that you and I were at night one.
Wow.
Yeah. I warned the mayor. I said, USA Mike is going to be shoving the guitar right in front of us. Whole show. Get ready for that. He did it again.
USA Mike is great.
They did not do Dangerous Type Night 2, but they did the other cover that people know from Letters to Cleo is Cheap Trick, I Want You to Want Me.
Oh.
I think that's what they did in the movie 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yes.
Which is another movie I have never seen. But I think they're actually in the movie. You see Cleo performing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I hear. I haven't seen it.
I have seen it.
Did you like that one?
That one, better than The Craft.
Yeah?
Yes.
I haven't seen it. I did not mention the horn section to Felicity because I figured that'll be a surprise, you know? And it turns out there was no horn section night two. So that was one night only.
Oh.
That's the one time in the history of Letters to Cleo they had a horn section, Cornflake. You were there. But they did do something special at the end of the second night. And this is a name that I had heard over the years, but I didn't know too much about it. I looked him up. Kay started talking about a guy named Mike Dineen. And I knew this name. Mike Dineen was a music producer, ran a studio in Boston for years and years. He started Q Division Studio. Q Division was very, very popular. Any musicians around Boston or even from outside the area, they would come in to work at Q Division. And this guy, Mike Dineen, had a reputation. People loved to work with him. He just had a great ear for music and was a great record producer. In fact, when Letters to Cleo, when they were producing their first songs, Here and Now, their hit, mm-hmm. has that crazy rapid-fire vocals in the chorus.
Yes.
That was Mike Dineen. He was the one that realized we should feature that line in the song.
Oh.
Yeah, that was him that said, that's the song, that's the hook. He was absolutely right.
Yes.
And arguably, Letters to Cleo may not have gotten anywhere near as big as they did without this guy, Mike Dineen, making that decision about that record.
Wow.
Yeah, I found an article about him from earlier this year where Kay is quoted as saying something like, without Mike Dineen, I might be working at TGI Fridays right now. I wouldn't go that far, but she certainly recognizes how important this guy was.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Amy Mann, Liz Phair, Guster, Destiny's Child worked with him. Like big name acts, the Pixies, Natalie Merchant. It's a long, long list. And Mike Dineen died this year. He died this past summer.
Oh.
He was very young. So Kay was talking about Mike. Then she brought out a couple of young girls, like teenage girls, came out on stage. One of them was Mike's daughter.
Wow.
And a friend of hers. These two young girls come out. They're going to sing. And also, more people kept coming out. This whole background chorus of people came out. A couple of them I didn't recognize, and they were being introduced so fast that I'm not even sure who they were. But the people I did recognize were Jen Trinan. She was pretty big around the Boston music scene back then, and she was actually Mike Dineen's wife, which I did not know until I looked them up after the show.
Wow.
But I knew Jen Trinan. I'd seen Jen Trinan before. I didn't realize that this is Mike's wife. Michelle Paulus comes out. She's the front woman of Stars Like Ours,
yep.
who I've recommended here on the Flopcast a few times over the last couple of years. Local Boston rock band. They are terrific. She was also a member of the Aquanuts.
Yes.
A hair metal cover band. She is super cool. She comes out. And also Gail Greenwood. She's the bass player in Belly.
Wow.
I recognized her immediately. I said,
yeah.
That's Gail. I know Gail. A member of Belly just came out. And anyway, so there's a big crowd on the stage now for the end of the show, and they performed another song, which Mike Dineen produced, and which the band that recorded the song gives him all the credit for all the success they had with this song. That was Fountains of Wayne. They did Stacy's Mom. That was the conclusion of the show.
Wow.
So that was fun, and a nice tribute to an important dude from the Boston rock scene.
So Kay sang the lead vocals for Stacy's Mom?
Actually, the two teenage girls on the stage actually did the lead vocals.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they let the two girls sing lead, which was very sweet.
Wow.
It was, very fun. And that was night two of Letters to Cleo.
That is spectacular.
Yikes, we love them. And, you know, see you next year, Cleo.
And if I go back again, I'm not having coffee seltzer before the show.
You have to choose your beverage wisely.
Yes.
Heading into a Letters to Cleo show.
Thank you for bringing me out so that I could see the awesomeness that was Cleo.
I'm so happy you could finally come with me. So that was our big night or nights out on the town in the freezing cold this past weekend.
I'm almost thawed out.
Well, I'm not, because I was out in the freezing cold again yesterday as we record. I hinted that I was extra exhausted right now.
Yeah.
And I will just mention real quick, I went out like a maniac and ran again. I did another 5K yesterday.
It gets dangerous around here at this time of year.
Well, I figured I'd do one more before it got too crazy cold, but then the crazy cold tricked me and showed up early. Mid-November suddenly plummeted into wintry temperatures.
I'm just glad it didn't snow on you. I heard from you at the end, which is how I knew you were okay.
I sent you a text from the end of the race, because the end of the race, which was also the beginning of the race, made a big loop, you know, but the finish line, it ended right at a giant sign with a lobster on it, which I knew you might appreciate.
I had them put that there for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So I could find my way back. Just yep. Come to the lobster.
Look for the lobster.
Oh, the other thing you would have liked on this run I did was, at one point the run went right by some sort of a dog park. We were running by this field with like a fence around it, and there were just all these people and dogs in it. And I was thinking, if you were on this thing, you would have just stopped and played with all the dogs at this point.
Truth.
Yeah. That's where I would have lost you. I would have pulled ahead at that point.
Mine would have been a less than 5K.
Yeah, you would have been a dog K. Yes. At whatever point the dog showed up, that's where you stopped. Good plan. And that concludes my outdoor running for the season, I think.
Thank you.
Yeah. We're going to reconvene in the spring. We'll go out and run amongst the lobsters and the dogs again.
They'll be right there waiting.
Right there waiting like Richard Marx. One more thing this week, Cornflake. Because we have some holiday stuff coming up in the next few weeks. The holidays are going to come and go so quickly at this point. So I want to get this in before we lose all track of time. It's a Flopcast holiday tradition. Let's get this out of the way right here at the top of the holidays.
Okay.
How about the Figgy Pudding Pages?
Oh, boy.
This is, of course, we take our regular Flopcast segment, the Pudding Pages.
And we figgy them.
We're going to figify them. So the Pudding Pages, you know how this works. We have a book, we have two books, of stuff from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. A big alphabetical list of stuff. We're going to turn to a random page in this book. I have the 90s book today.
In honor of the fact that we've been talking about Letters to Cleo?
Yes, we've been talking about a 90s band all night. We have the Totally Sweet 90s. We're going to turn to a random page in this book. We're going to discuss whatever is on that page, but we have to somehow make it holiday-themed at the same time.
Yes, we are going to wave our figgy at it.
Now, how do we get to a random page, you ask?
I'm afraid I know the answer to this question.
Well, I have here a mason jar.
Oh, are we going to pick a number out of the mason jar?
Yeah, I have a giant mason jar full of ping pong balls numbered 1 through 229.
Dare I ask what happened to the supercomputer?
No, I'm kidding. We are using the supercomputer.
Oh, man.
The supercomputer, which fills a whole wall of our studio here, it's a fire hazard.
Even more so at this time of year, it is a fire hazard. With all the tinsel we put on it?
We have not decorated yet, but as soon as we do, as soon as we cover it in tinsel and electric lights... It's a recipe for disaster. A very festive recipe for disaster.
I see some tinsel in it. Is that from last year?
There's always a little bit left from last year. Just clings to the computer all year.
Get all the tinsel off.
Absolutely not. So this is a computer that you stole from NASA and dragged back to the studio about 8 years ago. You're going to get a random number out of this thing right now. Cornflake, we are turning to page 161. Oh, here's a good one.
Yeah?
By good, I mean horrifying.
Oh.
Cornflake, we have landed on The Real World.
Yes! This is magnificent.
The Real World started in 1992.
We've discussed The Real World in the show before.
Arguably the first of the reality shows in the classic reality format that has persisted to this day.
One of the only reality shows I ever liked.
All right, so you watched The Real World.
Yeah, I did.
What seasons? What years are we talking about, approximately? For how long did you cling to The Real World?
Okay, in fairness, I only watched with regularity in 1994 into 1995.
So that season three or so? Or whatever
around there, okay. When they had Puck and Pedro.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We've discussed this on the show.
We have discussed it, because that's when the comic book guy... There's a comic book writer that was in that cast as well.
Because he wrote Pedro and Me.
Yeah. What's that dude's name? Comic book fans are screaming at us right now. How dare we have forgotten this? I've read stuff that this guy wrote. Judd Winnick.
Right.
It just came to me.
Ah, yes. Kim and Judd. Now I remember.
Let's pretend I didn't just look that up.
Okay.
I've read some of Judd Winnick's comic book work. I think he wrote some Green Arrow. He wrote some stuff that I've read. So you watched that season?
Yes.
Just the one season, that was it?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I had no idea how they would ever top it, and I don't think they ever did.
That was their best season?
Yes.
All downhill from there. Do they still do it? Is it still on?
In some configuration, I think. Now, the trick is...
Was the real world a beloved holiday tradition in your family? You'd all gather around the TV Christmas morning?
If you checked your stocking... Yeah. On Christmas morning and found that you had the bootleg of 1994's The Real World on
that
DVD.
That was your dream every year.
That's how you knew that you were the best behaved kid in the house.
Right. Did Rankin Bass do a stop motion animated version of The Real World for the holidays?
There was one in production, I heard. But I think they had some trouble securing the rights because not all of the people... agreed to have their likenesses done in the form of Rankin Bass. Some of them were really, really touchy about it.
They did not all come back to do their own voices.
Yeah, there was a bit of drama.
Yeah. Mickey Rooney, I think, did the voice of Judd Winnick, I believe.
I believe so.
Yeah. Jimmy Durante did one of the voices, I believe.
The Real Holidays.
They called it The Real Holidays.
Yes.
By Rankin Bass. I love it. I love all those Rankin Bass shows, as you know. We got a request from a listener that this year... We really need to talk about the animated holiday specials more this year. So that's coming.
Are we able to go back into the recordings we did previously?
Did anybody notice if we just just drop in our recordings from 6 years ago? We did a couple of very extensive shows about the Christmas specials in the year one of the Flopcast. It's been a long time since we did a deep dive on this stuff. So I think this guy's right. I think we do have to do... some more holiday special talk this year, and we will.
Let's just hope they never do make a holiday special out of The Real World. I'm kind of afraid of how that would look, because that would be like peace to none and goodwill to like nobody.
I want to see a bunch of like little cartoon mice all forced to live together in a house, and they're angry and hate each other, getting fights all the time.
Man.
I want to see elves just in a screaming match.
If The Real World were a holiday special.
Not like a naked, drunk Santa Claus claymation.
They kick Rudolph out of the house for being different.
Well, that happened in the real Rudolph show, didn't it? It's business as usual at Rankin Bass. Kicked him right out of the Island of Misfit Toys. All right, the holiday real world special. We're going to make that happen.
That's horrifying. I'm sorry.
There is a new animated holiday special which a friend of mine worked on. Out this year.
Really?
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in an upcoming show.
Okay.
It was not the holiday real world.
Oh, thank you. I don't think I could take it.
I don't think. I haven't seen it yet. Maybe it is.
I really hope not.
I'll have to ask her if she has a drunk claymation Santa in it. Hopefully.
A drunk claymation Santa judging everyone.
Just like we've been dreaming of. Cornflake, I think we've rambled on long enough. Get us out of here.
Between shows, please do come find us on the internet, won't you? At flopcast.net or at facebook.com/flopcast or on Twitter. Our handle there is @flopcast or even on Instagram where the_flopcast is our handle.
Sounds about right.
Give or take a few websites, yeah.
Yeah, close enough.
Yeah. That's pretty much how it works.
All right. We have to commence our holiday time festivities. We're going to leave some cookies out for Edith Mason, and we'll see you next week.
Peace and cookies.
Hey, this is Mike. A few months back, I was given the assignment of creating a new promo for the Earth Station 1 podcast. I figured I had a ton of time, but I kind of got distracted. Go figure. And we realized we had somehow missed our deadline. So... here I am late at night trying to figure out something creative to get you to listen to our show. I guess I could just use my announcer voice. Listen to the Earth Station 1 podcast. For almost 9 years, we've been bringing your inner geek out to play. We are a founding member of the ESO Network, and you can find us up on most media players like iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. I think that might work.
And look at this. Now we're in the secret after show. Hello?
Hi. Still thinking about things you could use mason jars for.
I know that's all you think about from now on.
Yep.
Why, did you come up with another use for a mason jar?
Nope, I still just want to drink moonshine out of them.
You've seized upon their most perfect use. Why go on?
Right. Why mess with perfection?
Yeah, I didn't know that moonshine and mason jars went so well together, but I'll take your word for it.
Well, I suppose you could probably drink moonshine out of anything.
Well, I've seen the big jugs of moonshine.
Ah,
But you're going to mason jars.
All the way.
Okay.
So many mason jars full of booze, so little time.
That's right. We're not going to judge you. Well, yeah, we totally are going to judge
yeah,
you.
Yeah, we are.
Not really for the mason jar part, just for the this apparent insistence that you're surrounded by huge quantities of moonshine throughout the holidays. There might be a little judging.
Well, how else did you expect me to get through the holidays?
That's an excellent point.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the T Public store, which can all be found at ESONetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.